Hi, welcome everybody to the Troubadour channel. My name is Kirk Barbera, and we are with Miriam.
Hi there.
And I think I have it on the tip of my tongue, your last name, Kawar.
Yes.
Okay, that's the white people way to say it,
though. Yeah, it is.
What's the right way to say it?
Okay, I don't want to, you know, get all weird, but it's usually Hawar.
Hawar.
Yes.
Okay. Nice. All right. I like that.
Thanks.
How do you spell that, by the way?
So that's K-H-A-W-A-R.
K-H-A-W-A-R. Okay. So that way people can find you, because we're going to talk about your poetry.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about maybe Ralph Waldo Emerson and a poem that your stuff made me think of when I read it. And then we'll talk about culture, politics, ideas. No, probably not politics. Ideas and like how literature affects our lives is what I was looking forward to. We met at a writer's group here at Inklings Coffee. So if you guys are watching and not listening, I am sitting in some very comfortable chairs with a very uncomfortable shrub, ficus.
I think it's a fern. I'm not sure. Fern. I feel bad. I took botany when I was a junior in high school. It's not.
Oh. So it's a ficus, right? Ficus is fake tree, right? Isn't that what a fake tree is?
I'm not exactly sure.
And this thing's uncomfortable because it's like poking me in the face all the time, but it's all right.
Sorry about that,
but
Kirk.
It's a beautiful, thank you. Yeah, you're so considerate. It's like you put this here, and it's like, I'm sorry I put this here in my coffee shop. But we're in this gorgeous place called Inklings, which is funny because I was in a writer's group in Texas, and the writer's group was called Drinklings.
Drinklings.
And they were doing a pun on Inklings because they're all, you know, it's a Christian group. It's C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and their group, the Inklings. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so that was a fun group. So it was interesting. I came here. I'm staying in Livermore for the moment. And I just found this place and fell in love with the decor. How'd you find this place?
I started coming here when Inklings first opened. So I think Inklings opened 2015, 2016. And during that time, I was still in high school. So I would come here after like certain days of the week. Or I would come here after school certain days of the week and just, you know, like bring my computer, read books, try different drinks. It's a really great establishment.
Yeah, it's cool. They just need, for big guys like me, they need food. I need some food because then I'll stay here like 9 hours. Like, I just wouldn't leave. And I've definitely done that before. So we're going to talk about your poetry. Before we do, why don't you tell me, because I don't know if I know that much about you. I met you in two writers' groups. Or two sessions of the same writers' groups, and that's about it. We talked about one of your pieces in the past, I believe. Have we looked at any of your writing?
I think I brought in some poetry a couple of times.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I've definitely read your poetry. I don't know if we went through it in the group, but why don't you tell me a little bit about your background and what you're trying to do with your work in life, even if it's not poetry.
Yeah, no
problem.
Just out
of curiosity.
Yeah, if you have any questions, go ahead. So
I will interrupt, trust me. I'm very good at interrupting.
That's good to hear.
Bad and good, whatever.
So my name is Miriam. Right now, I'm a community college student. I go to DVC in San Ramon. Great school. I'm just, when it comes to things college-wise, I'm getting my general ed out of the way, but I was thinking about either majoring in studio art and teaching traditional painting at a college level, or pursuing like a writing degree and figuring out what to do with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you want to go to university?
Oh, like, do I want to transfer to a four-year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So studio art or writing? So what would studio art, like, is this actual painting, sculpture, like actually in a studio, that kind of art?
Yeah.
Okay. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, so when I was in high school, I wasn't that much of a great student. And I was kind of on the fence about going to a community college at first because, you know, I still wanted, you know, that 4-year experience. And there's kind of like that stigma of going to a community college if you go to a school that's very academically intense.
Yeah.
But I'm honestly grateful that I chose to go because a lot of the professors that I've met have really made like a positive impact on my life.
Nice.
And it would be nice to like, you know, do that for someone else.
Okay. So you would want to teach at a community college, you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so I went to a community college and then I dropped out Because I had the opposite experience of you.
That's okay.
And I just disdained all of my teachers. but I was in business, so it might have been different if that was my first inclination.
You were a former business student?
I was a business student.
So can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What does it feel like to have no soul?
Is that something that business people... so it feels good to have money. How about that? You can fill up your soul, the bank vault of your soul. We're in the vault here at Inklings. So we can fill that up with cash, which is a nice thing to do, so I could do stuff like this. How about that?
I'm sorry. I'm giving you a hard time because my sister is a business student.
Yeah.
So.
No, I'm with you. It's, and I do think there is something wrong with the way they teach business where there isn't soul in it. Like when I was in business school at first, or community college.
Yeah.
And then when I actually went to university, I decided not to pursue business and I went into film production. So, but when I think what you're saying, I totally get actually. I know it's a joke, but I actually get it because whenever I would ask people, and this was 18, 19 years old, I'd ask people, like students, so what do you want to do in business? Like what kind of, and they're like, I don't know. And really all they wanted was to make a lot of money for the sake of making a lot of money. And, you know, I know I kind of joke about that, but that's a very good way to become a bad person. If all you want is the money for the sake of the money. And there didn't seem to be like a culture. So I've learned this in meeting like people at Harvard and Yale. It's even worse at some of those Ivy League schools because they tend to push them into consulting or banking and finance. And it's like, everyone's doing this. It's like, there's like this weird prize on the stage that everybody's clamoring for. Nobody asks like, why the hell do we want this thing? Like, why do I want this consulting job? So anyway, that idea of not having a soul is, I think, a big problem in business actually. And it's one of the things that, you know, made me not go pursue the business, even though I ran my own business before I went back to college, and go into a film production and pursue literature and art and poetry. It's because I think business people especially need to fill that, you know, have some kind of a reference point that literature and poetry, I think, can provide.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, everyone needs to pursue meaning within their life in some sort of capacity. And you can do that with a career, but a lot of people don't like what they do for a career most of the time. So things like art, poetry in general can be a really great way to make yourself feel fulfilled in life.
Well, I definitely see trends of, you know, what people like. So in the last 15 years, anybody who's looking at markets knows that the health market, you know, physical training, health in general has been going up, right? And you're seeing something similar going on with the head market.
The head market?
Psychology, therapy, meditation is on the rise.
Yeah.
You're getting like these people in tech are now spending hundreds of, you know, millions and tens of millions, whatever, in apps that are for meditation. And so there's, you know, I think there's going to be probably a boom in, you know, what I call the headspace. And art is a part of that, you know, like the painting and that type of thing as like either an expression or even a discovery of yourself. That's part of what I think is going to be on the rise, just like you would have in the, you know, health space where people try different sports. There's Ironmans or iron triathlons and all these things. And, you know, gym memberships have exploded over the past 20 years. So it's just an interesting time. And I think the headspace is coming. It's if it's not already on its way. So I think you're well placed if you have a little bit of a mind for business. So you need to marry them. You need to have both of them. And at least it helps.
I was just thinking when you said that we'll probably see like an emergence of, was it the business of headspace or just headspace in general?
Well, I think headspace in general, but yeah, headspace in general, but you need the business side of it for it to actually reach a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right. Otherwise you're doing it for your family and that's good, but it's not as good as reaching the people in your community and maybe thousands, maybe millions of people and affecting them.
No, I was just thinking that even though society is more secular than I think it has been in the past, you still get to see like the rise of religions in a certain regard, like mm-hmm. whether that's people converting to more religions that are considered orthodox, or like the new age movement, or even people like, you know, like Jordan Peterson, that
oh yeah,
who takes like elements of Christianity to like apply it to like modern life.
Yeah,
yeah, it's just there's like a pattern emerging, and it's interesting to see, I guess.
Do you think it's a positive pattern or a negative pattern?
I think it's
ambivalent.
Ambivalent, and it has the power to be positive or negative.
Okay, so how do you make it positive with your poetry and with our work here and getting started?
Maybe. I hope so. I hope so.
Well, I mean, so Jordan Peterson's an interesting case because there's a lot of people who really hate him, right? So there's a lot of negative elements about what people have assumed about him or whatever. And there's a lot of people who really love him and have, you know, so there's like two sides. So the, I guess one of the things that good literature does, cause he's not really literate, like literature person, I should say, like he's a psychologist. Like that's his training. He, you know, worked at, what was it? The University of
Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he was at Harvard before teaching, but he teaches psychology mostly.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's his basics. So, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that. He's of course applied Catholic, you know, thinking and the Bible to psychology. Mm-hmm. And, so I think like he's not a literature person per se, but I do think like people in literature, in art, in poetry, in painting can have a really strong impact in kind of bridging this divide that we find ourselves in culturally, you know, like providing a space to kind of help people. Like I think that's kind of what Jordan Peterson was doing with his stories, right, when he tells those biblical stories.
I think it's the biblical lecture series.
Yeah, have you seen that?
Yeah, I mean, so
I've seen that. I'm a pretty big fan, actually. I do like him.
Yeah, Inklings used to have I believe it was a meetup dedicated to things like myths and stories and general things like that. Yeah, yeah. And we actually listened to him a couple of times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, so let's talk about your poetry and then maybe we could bridge that into the broader culture of what we've been talking about. So I when I read your poetry, the poem that came to my mind was one by Ralph, or at least like two or three of your poems.
Yeah.
Which are kind of about the craft to some degree, a little bit, right? Like it's about, there's one called Artist to Artist, mm-hmm. right? So it's, I mean, it's not about the craft, but it's about like what art is a little bit. It kind of touches on that. Is that, am I wrong?
I think that's what my intention was with Artist to Artist.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the poem that brought to my mind was Ralph Waldo Emerson's The Apology, which is him kind of apologizing to people because he's that spacey poet that kind of walks around like a forest or whatever, and he's in a garden and he's lost and people are like, what the heck, where's Ralph, where'd he go? And he's, you know, he's kind of up in the sky, and but he apologizes in this poem, and you know, I could read it after, like to hear one of yours first, and then it's you know, because he's kind of people complain that he's not present sometimes. And he's saying, well, it's because I'm going to this glen and getting a thought for you, right? And it's kind of the idea of art, nature as education, but through the processing power of a good poet. So,
in a sense, it sounds like he's the type of person where he needs to lose himself in order to find himself and find guidance for other people.
So what do you, so is that not you? You don't, because you're saying lose yourself in order to find yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
I mean, it's more like, I think you kind of see this if you're a little into like Jungian psychology, okay. where a lot of people emphasize things on, you know, meditation or sometimes even periods of isolation that are needed to kind of really reflect on anything from who you are as a person to your thought patterns, your behavior. And in turn, you can use that to improve yourself and even give guidance to other people. Do you think that makes sense or it's too vague?
Well, I don't think any individual like psychological viewpoint is 100% correct. I think it tends to help to have a variety of different techniques, mm-hmm. which is why I think a lot of people going into psychology And hopefully taking a good knowledge of literature will be helpful, because I think literary writers, poets, were the first psychologists in a lot of ways. But in the idea of like getting lost like that in order to be found, I mean, yeah, I think sometimes that can be helpful. I think sometimes like doing something, if what you mean by that in specific is doing something that you're maybe not used to. So like in that kind of chaos of getting, you know, the Jungian way of thinking about it, right? The chaos of things, you have to order it. And in doing that, you learn something about yourself. I think there is something to that. You know, I just recently learned how to ride a motorcycle.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Which is unusual. I was one of the older people who had like most people that had ridden a motorcycle did it when they were a kid. And even if they were like in their 40s and 50s, but they hadn't done it for 20 years. But I was the first one who had never, or the only one at the, you know, training places that had never been on a motorcycle in my life. And it was definitely very helpful for me as a person, even though it was very shaky at first. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And I did fall off a couple of times. And I even bought a Harley and fell off and like caused $4,000 of damage.
Oh my God.
Within the first week. But now I'm like much better. But that by doing that, I learned a lot about, I think, life and some good positive things about that. So,
yeah.
And if you mean getting lost and then finding yourself, that aspect, then sure. But if you mean just like a stupor, no. I don't think it's like, I don't think you're going to, you know, daze out and then find yourself. Like, yeah.
I mean, I didn't mean it that way. It's more like.
Some people do, is the problem.
Really? Like certain writers who would get extremely drunk and then write like a manuscript?
Yeah, exactly. I think some people think that kind of stupor works, and I don't. So inducing the stupor, no.
All right.
So let's hear one of your poems.
Sure. Is there a specific one that you want me to start with?
They're all pretty short, so let's do two or three. And then if you have anything to say, so like, why don't we start with Artist to Artist, since we've talked about that one.
Yeah, no problem.
And then, so I'm not a poet, but I consider myself kind of an artist. I write scripts and novels and stuff. So are you talking to me or only to other poets or only the creatives? Who are you talking to?
I think what my intention was to kind of address, you know, the figure of the muse that's predominant in like different like cultures and like societies.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of ancient Greek literature.
Oh, me too.
Sing to me, O muse.
Yeah, that was my intention with it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like it. So you're talking to the muse, not to the artist necessarily, not to me, but to the muse.
Yeah, it's more like a thank you. Like, thank you for the work that you do.
Interesting. Okay, because let's hear it.
Most people...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. Okay.
No, always interrupt me because I talk too damn much.
Yeah, I've noticed that most people, you know, they... well, it makes sense to praise and thank artists who create great works, but I kind of wanted to do something a little bit more different and thank the muse instead.
Yeah, I think that's smart. However you want to conceptualize the muse. So let's hear it and then let's talk about it a little bit about the muse.
All right. How beautiful was your mind and the ability to see the essence of the universe. I see it through you as you pass from artist to artist.
Okay, so that's very short. It's like a little couplet, like a one verse, right?
Yeah.
Very pretty. And I like the sentiment behind it. That's what I liked about it, is what you're trying. Like, I didn't quite catch the muse part. But it makes sense because you could think of another artist almost as a muse, right? Like if you read Homer,
yeah,
you can think of him as kind of a muse himself, even though he's singing to the muse. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Was that your intention at all?
I would say so. Also, so Rumi wrote this short poem, and I think it went something along the lines of, the beauty that you see in me is a reflection of you. And that kind of...
I think I've heard that one.
Yeah. That's, I don't know.
Probably, yeah.
That was also something short and sweet, but I thought that there was a lot of sentiment behind it, and it was a very thoughtful, compassionate thing to say. Okay. So that's something that I wanted to replicate in this as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I like it. Is it the same meter that you were using as Murumi?
I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I don't write poetry. Is how because come? One, I suck. I have written like two poems and I did suck.
Two poems? That's barely anything.
Yeah, but I suck. Like, it was not good. Because I really like the masterful ability of a good, like Wordsworth and Coleridge and these guys who are able to, they mastered meter and rhythm and structure. They understood all of it, and they were able to play within it with ideas and images and metaphors and similes and all the you know, connotation and denotation, just all the kind of elements of language that we can use that's like available to us. Mm-hmm. And so since I can't do that, I don't want to do it at all. Like, I mean, I just feel like it's, I don't know. It's just a personal thing.
Come on. Everyone starts somewhere. Do you remember the first time you ever like shot something with your camera or tried to record a podcast?
Oh yeah.
And it probably did not. I mean, I don't want to seem rude, but it probably didn't come out as great as you wanted it to, but you
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You still kind of put your
foot.
It
took years to get even. Exactly. Moderate, and I'm not even good yet. I'm still okay.
It's the same type of attitude you should carry with poetry.
No, I understand. Like, I write. I've written novels and other things. It's poetry specifically. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like you have to, you either have it with poetry or you don't. It's similar to music. Like, I can tap my feet kind of to the beat on a dance floor.
Yeah.
But I have just pretty bad rhythm on a dance floor. And I just get out there and I just don't have it. And I think some people kind of either have it or they don't. And the worst is when someone thinks they have it and they don't have it.
Oh God, that's my like, number one fear.
They're out there like, it's like, dude, you're not on the beat, man. Get out there, get off the dance floor. I go, I'm sorry. Like, I don't mean to be mean, but you're not on the beat, brother. And so it's like, that's how I feel with poetry. Oops. Yeah, if you don't mind, thank you. We have a great person here. I don't know if he wants to be mentioned, but he's there. Perfect. He's helping with the video and getting it back.
Yeah.
Do you want to say hi?
Hi.
I hope dinner with your daughter goes well. By the way.
Hi.
Yeah. Thank you. So we're at Inklings. We recruited people in the area to kind of help us out. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
That's the only annoying thing about this DSLR. So yeah, that kind of non-rhythmic ability is some of my problems with poetry. Although, I don't know if you read the short story I have on troubadourmag.com.
Is it the ad executive and the blind beggar?
No, but it was one, I mean that one too, but Promethean Liver.
I've been meaning to check it out. That's okay. I'm sorry.
So that one, there was a moment in there when I wrote something in what I would call poetic prose. Mm-hmm. And some people might call it purple prose, but I tried not to be too over the top. But I tried to do a rhythmic language more than, so not focusing on just syntax and clarity and you know, making sure everything is grammatically correct, mm-hmm. but trying to go for something a little bit more flowing and, you know, sounds good. So I did try that for one passage, and a very important integral passage. So I tried. I don't think I succeeded. You'll have to tell me.
All right. Well, I promise to get back to you on that. Do you think you might share it with the group?
Yeah, I mean, I already shared it. I mean, I already put it on the... I just don't usually print anything. That's the problem with the group.
Trying to be eco-friendly?
No, I just don't have paper on my printer. I'm not, you know, against the, you know, environment. I'm just not...
I think we should check it out then as a group and see.
Yeah, I did actually bring something for today, but we can talk about that later. I want to talk about your stuff more.
All right, no problem.
So the muse, inspirational. Anything yes. else on those two things for you?
The muse, inspirational? What do you mean by two things? Like,
the muse is inspirational to you, your poem is about... The muse and inspiration, your poem is about that and about how it's impacted you, and you wanted to emulate that. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other thoughts on the purpose of that or what it does for you?
I'm not exactly sure how to put it into words, but I would say that it's also about kind of sharing that sacred connection with someone.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I've noticed sometimes that if I look back and see a certain figure, whether that's like an artist or maybe a writer, I kind of like feel this certain connection with them. And
yeah, for sure.
on the tip of my tongue and I can't really explain it, but it's a sense of gratitude and it's a sense of thanks.
So, okay. Yeah. That's what the poem is. So the poem is a thank you to, I mean, give me an example. Let's talk about like a book, an author that has had an impact on you. Rumi, you mm-hmm. mentioned.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Toni Morrison.
Toni Morrison.
Yeah.
The,
she's the author of Beloved.
The what?
Beloved.
Beloved. I feel like that was like a musician.
Toni Morrison?
No. Okay. So Toni Morrison, Beloved. So tell me about Beloved. So we're getting a book recommendation for the audience.
I don't know.
Toni Morrison, Beloved.
I think Beloved is a kind of like recommended reading. Like my sister is reading it in like her junior English class or no, her senior English class.
So this is a new book though.
Beloved?
Yeah.
I think Beloved's a classic.
We'll have to look this up. All right. Look it up. So tell me about Beloved while I'm looking this up. What is it about?
You're going to hate me, but I've only read the first couple of pages of Beloved. I'm
Wait,
here.
What?
Yeah, I'm serious. I just literally read it last weekend. My sister had it in the car.
Okay.
And there was just, I don't know. I know it's bad, but there's not a whole lot that I know about Toni Morrison, and there's not a whole lot that I know about Beloved.
Okay.
But just reading the first couple of pages of it, I'm not sure if it was the prose or the storyline or like just in general what the author was trying to convey, but I don't know. There was like an unspoken part of the book that just spoke to me in a sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
That's I hate good. To be redundant, but that's how I feel.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I guess it's interesting. So you just, cause you wrote that poem before you read Beloved.
Yeah.
So what did that poem, was there an author you had in mind for that poem? Was it Rumi? You mentioned Rumi.
It was probably Rumi.
Okay.
I can't put my bets on it, but I am a Rumi fan. I admit it.
I know only some of his, a couple of his famous ones. I'm not 100% sure. Everyone always says like, Kirk, you would love Rumi. I think he's fine. I don't know why he's not my favorite. Like, I don't know. What do you like about Rumi?
I think he seemed like the type of person that was, I don't know. I don't mean to stumble on my words.
It's all right.
Yeah.
You just like him. He's got good use of words.
He seems like a genuine person.
Yes. And he's writing in the 1600s or before that?
I think it might have been before that.
Okay.
It might have been the Islamic Golden Age. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it was just kind of beautiful to see someone who would write about things like divine love in a time period that I kind of find unimaginable. Like, I have no idea what he's going through in the day-to-day sphere. We know, like, some aspects about him, but we don't really know, like, what he was like as a person in general. But his writing was just so beautiful, and it came from a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's, I mean, it's definitely something to that, we're reading translations, right? Do you read?
I don't know any Arabic.
Arabic, okay. Okay, so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is one of the things, like, I really like the French writer Victor Hugo.
Victor Hugo? Is he the one who wrote Les Mis?
Yeah.
Les Mis is good.
Not the play.
I know, but the book.
Yeah. So I've always told myself one day maybe I'll learn to read and speak French. I don't know if I ever will, but I should, because I've read all of his major novels. I've read most of his plays, and you know I've read some of his poetry. But from what all experts say is like it's not, especially with poetry, it's never really the same because the sound is so important in poetry. So I don't know. I feel like, I don't know if you were ever interested in learning Arabic or not.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
I think I have a couple of family members, and if I bribe them, they might teach me.
Okay. That'd be cool. So you got a source. Now, do they speak it or do they teach it? Because it's a big difference.
Oh, well, on second thought, it might not actually work out anyway, because I'm pretty sure Rumi wrote in classical Arabic.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah. And
probably something a little bit different.
My aunt is Egyptian, modern day. Not born in the 1600s or before, so she probably wouldn't be able to help me out.
Fair enough. Okay, so there was another poem of yours. Let me see. I can't remember the name of it. It is.
Is it I Called Upon Your Name, or is that a different one?
No, I'm not. I don't think so. What was the other one? There's another one that's about artists, I think, and the art. Isn't there?
I can check.
And we'll put these on. So we're going to post a couple of these on troubadourmag.com, right? And so if you guys want to see the actual poems, put it up there with some cool images. Make it look nice. Put it in the magazine for next month. Which one is this?
This one's Near Poetry.
Okay, let's try that one.
Are you
Sounds
sure?
right. Yeah.
It's mushy, but all right. I'll give like it a shot.
I like mushy.
Okay.
I'm a rom-com guy, actually.
What's your favorite rom-com?
Stardust.
Stardust?
Yeah.
That's a good choice.
I really like Stardust. I don't know why. What else?
Have you ever seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't my favorite, but I like that one. I think my favorite of the one I've seen the most. Oh my gosh. Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts. She's a movie star. Everyone in the room knows what I'm talking about. Notting Hill. Thank you. That's one of my favorites. Thank you, everybody in the room. So I like Notting Hill. It's probably one of my favorites. That and Stardust. So, but, yeah.
But you're not a Big Fat Greek Wedding fan?
I like it. It's just, I don't know. It's not. I don't know. It didn't. What's maybe the, I just watched it at the wrong time.
What's the main character's name again? Is it?
In My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I just remembered something very Greek. But it's a good movie, and I will defend it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just didn't hit me like the Stardust one, I guess. I mean, it depends on which. I liked Big Sick.
Big Sick?
That was really good.
Oh, that's the one. I can't pronounce his name, but he's like a South Asian guy, I think, and he's in love with like a white woman, and his family's against it.
Yeah. 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 And it's that's a pretty good one. Or that's a very good one, I should say.
That's good.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm fine with mush.
Oh,
so that's the whole point. But. Yeah. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I've noticed that you don't really see that double standard in movies. Like, for example, a brown girl with, like, a non-brown guy. I think the only movie that comes to mind is Mississippi Masala with Denzel Washington.
I've never seen that.
It was made in, like, the 80s or the 90s.
Mississippi Masala?
Yeah, it's about basically this...
I like Denzel Washington.
Yeah, this girl, and her family's, like... I think they're a refugee family.
Okay.
And they settle in the South, and there's kind of like some clashes between the Indian population there and the black population there. And then it's kind of like a love story that blooms from that.
So you're saying there's no stories or no big movies about that are the reverse of The Big Sick? Are you saying that's a reverse of The Big Sick? Oh, because you're talking about from the female perspective.
Or like
a female's, her family doesn't want her to be with.
Oh, I'm not saying that there aren't any movies, but I think, like, for example, The Big Sick kind of fit like a niche. Because I'm not maybe. Sure if in the movie he's from like a Muslim family. Is he?
I mean, I think they are. I don't know if they're like traditional. I can't remember now. I know that they want him to marry a nice Indian girl.
A nice
that
Indian
was the whole
girl.
Point.
Yeah.
And they keep setting him up. Like the father keeps bringing him over for dinner, you know, just to hang out. And then he happens to bring this attractive young Indian girl there.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think, I've never seen the movie, but.
Do you know? Pakistani. Also, okay.
Yeah.
Are they religious? Oh, okay. Okay. He's Pakistani.
No, it's all right. You're good.
I lost the video. Hold on one second. If it's over, that's okay. We'll just keep going with that. That's all right. We'll keep going with this guy.
All right. So you want to keep going with the rom-com situation?
Yeah, yeah, whatever we're talking
scenario.
About.
Or yeah. conversation, sorry.
Yeah, I can't do long, like, in the future, I won't be able to do long interview or discussions with this thing, I don't think.
Okay.
I'll have to get something else.
All right.
But anyway, so I don't know if he's religious or not.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, this was so long and drawn out, but my main point was is that you see, I mean, there's not a whole lot of, you know, South Asian people in the film industry right now, but there are, I feel like, are more movies about, like, South Asian guys wanting to be someone of, like, for example, a different culture, a different religion, but you don't really see the reverse, like a South Asian girl wanting to be with someone someone who's not of her same background, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The only movie that comes to mind is Mississippi Masala, and that was made in like the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
But okay, so you're just saying anybody outside of the two societies, their cultures.
Yeah.
Is the idea. Okay. I mean, I can't think of any. I feel like the idea of someone getting outside of their culture has been something that's done quite a few times. But you're saying not from the perspective of the woman outside of her culture. Maybe yeah. I'm wrong. I don't know. That's a good point. I'll have to look into that now.
All right.
Yeah, I haven't thought of it that way. Okay, that's cool. So let's hear this mush.
Okay.
This mush.
So this one is called Near Poetry. So it begins as, "And maybe my love is near poetry. Fickle, misconstrued, being endlessly drafted, containing boundless ends. But I will let you know, just like those unspoken words, I keep you close to my heart forever."
I see it. Why do you think that's mushy? I mean, because it has to do with love a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. That's not super mushy. I think it's good.
Well, what's your definition of super mushy?
Like the big sick. I don't know. It's I mean, I guess for me, when it's imagistic, when it's showing you something, right? Like the mere mention of love or something related to love isn't mushy. I guess some people would probably consider that, like, if you even talk about that, but this is poetry, so it's okay to talk a little bit about love, I would think.
Right.
But I liked it. Yeah. So good.
Thank you.
What made you think of that one, or what inspired that one for you?
I think what inspired me was, you know, like that sensation of kind of having like a new crush on someone.
Oh yeah, who doesn't? I'm old, so I've had that happen a lot.
You're good. You're not that old, are you?
I'm 33. I'm good.
33 years young. Congratulations.
Yeah. I mean, I feel young, but I look a lot older than everybody. Most people think I'm 40.
Wow.
Luckily, the camera shut off, so they don't see me anymore. But on camera, camera doesn't add 10 pounds. It adds 10 years to me. I look 50 on camera. the freckles of my bald head go away. And, oh, man.
You're being too harsh on yourself. So I'd say that.
So yes, I do know the feeling.
Okay.
Of you're saying having a crush, which is different than falling in love.
So it's mainly like,
I think,
when you're starting to maybe have like a crush on someone, and then that develops even further into something, you know, like love, or maybe it is love, and then that is kind of compared, almost to like feeling inspired to write something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I've said this before, like in the writers groups, is like the, I think I said this last week, like when somebody in a band gets broken up with, and then all of a sudden they write like Alanis
really
Morissette.
Good music.
They write like 14 amazing songs.
That's why Gwen Stefani is so talented.
Yeah. It's like, I think that does happen. And I've definitely, I mean, this happens not just in crushes, but just in high emotional situations. Breakups are another one, right? Mm-hmm. Like a breakup, you tend to have especially if it's a big breakup for you or something, like if it meant something to you, then I think there's something about, not all breakups do, some breakups is like, yeah, I probably should have broken up, that's fine. Yeah. It's a good decision, but like you have this strong emotional reaction to anything, and if you have words or if you're a painter and you have a creative feeling, that's how you're going to want to get it out. Yeah. And if you don't, then, you know, like for guys, for instance, there's a lot of guys who will just get angry and like want to punch walls and stuff because they have no way to get it out.
Wow.
Right. So, yeah. Okay. So
I hope that, sorry to interrupt. Is it okay? With the last two lines, just like those unspoken words, I keep you close to my heart forever. My intention wasn't to make it sound negative or like the narrator was spurned with their interests. It was more like an appreciation for the experience that love gives. And that when the narrator says, I keep you close to my heart forever, there's a positive memory associated with that. Because I truly believe that love makes you grow as a person for the better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people are at their most open when they fall in love.
Yeah.
In general. Which could be a bad thing sometimes, but I mean, could be a good thing too.
Definitely.
If it's the right person or a good person.
Yeah. One of my biggest pet peeves is when someone will do something awful and then they'll say, like, I did it out of love, you know? Like, for example, like you'll be watching... Like, oh, no, go
Game
on.
Game of Thrones. Jaime Lannister throwing... Do you watch Game of Thrones?
I know that... Is Jaime Lannister the one that's in love with her brother?
Yeah.
Or is that brother. Cersei?
Well, they're brother... So you don't watch Game of Thrones?
I don't.
It's my favorite show of all time. That's what the shirt comes from. Shirt's from Game of Thrones. Anyway.
What does it say?
That's what I do. I drink and I know things.
Very wise.
Yeah. So that's from Tyrion Lannister, the imp, played by Peter Dinklage. Mm-hmm. Anyway, great show. If you're into literature, I think that's one of the great shows. Like, it's what we could talk about. I could talk forever about the literature of it. But I think, and the actual show, not just the books. But anyway, the first episode, so I'm not saying anything, Jaime Lannister, the brother, throws a young boy out of a window.
Because he interrupts him in an
act. So you know about this. Yeah. Yeah, in the act of lovemaking. And he says, the things I do for love.
Ew.
That's the word he says.
To his sister, of all people.
Well, he double loves her. Sisterly love and incestuous love. I don't know.
Oh, God.
I'm just saying, I'm not, you know, that's the show. I'm not approving of it. But that's what you're saying, is like the idea of doing bad things in the name of love.
I feel like that's not actually love. It's usually an expression of something else. Like, for example, if, I don't even know, let's say that one person sees their spouse in, like, a compromising position, or even just in general gets very angry or upset at them, and then maybe like physically hurts them.
What do you mean a compromising position?
Like for example, like if
in one, those, thank you so much oh, for everything.
Okay. Not that dramatic, but more like they suspect that they could be like, you know, cheating on them or something.
Yeah, she's like hanging out with a guy.
Yeah.
That's it. She's just a friend.
Yeah.
And then the other guy sees him or them and freaks out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, and then maybe they'll like physically like hurt their partner, and then they said, "Oh no! Like I did it out of love. I didn't mean it." Like
that's, domestic abuse out of love. Yeah,
yeah, that's more like tribalism, or maybe not tribalism, but that's more like
it's definitely
like envy or jealousy.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's definitely letting your emotions rule over you, mm-hmm. and not trying to make sense of the situation. Instead, you know, like. This is the order and chaos thing, right? Like yeah. you could try and figure out what's going on and ask her who was that guy and try to have a rational conversation. But instead, you know, like what you're saying is there's something wrong with him and he doesn't feel adequate as a person and he feels threatened by other people or something. And so he, you know, lets it turn into violence outside of himself or something, you know, just making that out. Just one example, but that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right, is that what you mean?
Kind of.
And so you're saying it's not actually done for love.
I think that...
It's just an excuse.
That's true. And if you are exposed to love, like, multiple times, eventually you'll use that to be more of an empathetic person.
Play that out for me. What do you mean? If you're exposed...
Exposed to love.
To love.
Or you grow and you're the type of person that... can love someone else eventually, that makes you more of an empathetic person to be around.
Depends. Because, well, think of it this way. Think about if you're the type of person who falls in love a lot and nobody falls in love with you.
That sounds more like projection, though. Or if you just fall in love and...
Falling in love, it's called unrequited love. It's pretty common.
Yeah.
So... I'm just saying, like, the falling in love is an emotional thing, and it's not necessarily enough, right? Like, there has, like, or it could be bad, or like, somebody could be falling in love for the wrong reasons, right? All I'm saying is, like, anybody could just fall in love with someone. Or do you disagree with that? It's okay to disagree. It's just, not anybody could fall in love with anybody, but the act of falling in love, you know, I don't think of it that hard, but... That's the for turning it again.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. But yeah, so I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate of the flip side of that idea. of falling in love is enough to be open to new things. Because often, like, if you fall in love, you are open to things, but then if nothing comes in to fill that, like if another person doesn't reciprocate,
then you can just grow more bitter as a person.
Yeah, or you could fill it up with other things, right? Yeah. So it's like, yes, you're open for love, but then there's nothing, you know, it's not reciprocated, so then you're screwed, or you're filling it with negative things. Or, you know, young men today, this is a big problem, actually, go on to message boards and they, you know, are getting more and more bitter. And that's a bad thing.
Are you
that's
talking not... about incels?
Yeah, that idea. Yeah. That or like the MGTOW thing. The men
MGTOW?
The men go their own way.
I think I've heard about that,
I mean,
too.
Like, I didn't want to bring this up, but the shooter in New Zealand.
The Christchurch shooter?
Yeah. Like, he was on, that's who he was. He was that guy on those message boards all the time. And, you know, I don't know too much about him or anything, but it seemed like that type of person is open to being loved, loving at first. And then after a while, nothing's reciprocated. And that's a problem. That's his fault. It's nobody else's fault.
Yeah.
It's his fault. I'm not saying anything about that, but I'm just saying, like, it's, you know, I'm just playing the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what you think about that.
That's a lot at once. I'm not going to lie.
Okay, so I'll make it real quick simple. Like, the idea of being open to love is, or falling in love and being open, yes. But what happens when that isn't reciprocated? What does the person fill it with if it's not reciprocated? And they're in love and they're open.
I hope it's not a cheesy answer, but I think in that type of situation, it's important to love yourself first.
Okay, so how do you do that?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay, there we go. That's fine. I prefer, honestly, I definitely don't know all the answers either, and I don't know what the answer would be. I mean, I have thoughts, but I don't know if I know the answer specifically. Yeah. What do you think about with poetry and literature, filling it with that?
I would say that, like, for me, my poetry is, in a sense, trying to structure some order in what I mainly consider to be chaos. So that could be anything from, like, a relationship, not necessarily romantic, like platonic as well, that went south, or maybe me reflecting upon my past, or maybe, you know, for example, artist to artist, thanking, like, an abstract concept that you wouldn't usually able to do in any other different setting, you know? It's trying to just build some structure. And it's something that, as I grow older, I'm really appreciative of the fact that I'm able to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. That could be what you fill the void with. Is you're saying with yourself, and I'm saying with poetry and literature, so... Maybe your poetry, maybe other people's poetry, maybe your own poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be one solution to a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just small steps. Figuring it out one day at a time.
Well, I mean, like, one of the values of literature is that you get to see things happening right in front of your eyes, but conceptually, right?
Yeah.
So you could see a world that you want to live in eventually, and you can work toward that. That's one of the, especially with visual arts, it's one of the great things about filling your you know, like a painting like that is it's a pretty good painting, actually. And I don't know what kind of paintings you like, or what kind of paintings you do. Do you do objective or abstract?
Well, right now I'm mainly doing portraits, but okay. I would say that the types of paintings that I usually like are probably romantic, but, you know, your traditional figure paintings.
Like romanticism, or romantic as in... Like, romanticism as in, like, 19th century romanticism?
Yeah.
Okay. So that, you know, that's the whole point of the Troubadour magazine, right?
I know. I saw the little description of it.
Okay. So I didn't realize you did. So if you want to submit or send over one of your paintings, I'd love to put it up there.
Yeah, that sounds really incredible.
That's the idea. I mean, the whole point of the magazine and this podcast, to a large degree, is to reinvigorate that into the culture more, the romanticist spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm a big fan of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so any other things?
I think I'm good. Do you have anything else?
Well, I was going to say, we could finish by talking about the apology, or we could just call it a day.
The Apology?
By Emerson, poem. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure.
Okay. And the reason I'm bringing this one up is I think there's a lot to, a lot about the idea of the nature of a poet and what a poet is.
Yeah.
And since we've been talking about muses, we've been talking about, you know, love and falling in love, which is part of what a poet is, I think. Then there's also what it does for you individually, what it does for you when you need to fill that void. It can do that. Okay. So this is the Apology by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And he's not really known for poetry. This is one of his only good poems, I think. Okay. Think me not unkind and rude, that I walk alone in grove and glen. I go to the god of the wood to fetch his word to men. Tax not my sloth that I fold my arms beside the brook. Each cloud that floated in the sky writes a letter in my book. Chide me not, laborious band, for the idle flowers I brought. Every aster in my hand goes home loaded with a thought. There was never mystery, but 'tis figured in the flowers. Was never secret history, but birds tell it in the bowers. One harvest from thy field homeward brought the oxen strong. A second crop thine acres yield, which I gather in a song.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course. That's what this is all about.
Do you think great people had some sort of sense, had some sort of intuition at a young age that they were destined to do a certain thing?
Not always. There are, so I do like reading biographies and learning about a lot of these guys, and I think sometimes the opposite is true.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm studying a little bit of Wordsworth right now. And he was, you know, he did really bad in school, just like Einstein did really bad in school, right? You see that a lot, actually, I think, where they don't really fit into school sometimes. I think Steve Jobs didn't really fit into school when he was a young kid. You know, he dropped out of college, for instance. Bill Gates dropped out. So I don't know that they necessarily, these guys have a set, like they know that they're going to do these epic things. I do think that most of them have a drive that's not normal, and a, some, depending on the person, a courage that's not normal either, especially with poetry and poets. Like, I think they're, you know, maybe it's either an honesty or an, and sometimes it's just like with some of these guys, I think is an innate talent. So it's really hard to say the, answer that exactly in the way, like yes or no, because it's really case by case. I would say most of them had a strong ambition earlier in life than others, and they found their ambition earlier. So, you know, poets were writing often when they were 10, right? They were writing little ditties and poems and things like that. And you see that with artists, like they're drawing at a very young age, and that blossoms into, and they're not drawing like occasionally, like they're drawing a lot. And you see that with, you know, even with some like tech people.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Gates was coding when coding, before coding was a thing, like he was able to do it at a young age before anybody else could do it. He learned it, you know, in his early teens, and he did it nonstop. And like, he didn't sleep. He would just do it. He would, you know, go to school in the day, and at night he would go to the school, and he would code all night because they had an all night place to go practice code. So I just think there is something early on, and they kind of integrate it. I was reading this, you know, there's a Malcolm Gladwell.
The name sounds familiar.
Yeah, like he writes a lot of, not like he wrote Blank and Outliers and books like that. And in Outliers, they go, like, he talks about the Beatles and how many hours that they were playing when they were kids, and even when they were practicing before they ever came to the States to do it. And the point is that there is like something early on in people's lives that they do if they're going to become great. I mean, because we're talking about great, not like good. We're talking about like the best of the best of all time, right? So that's my answer.
All right. For great people, do you ever think there was maybe a time where they thought it was too late, where they would never accomplish what they wanted to accomplish?
I think they all probably go through a period like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of art like that, where a lot of like there's a Edmond Rostand who wrote Cyrano de Bergerac. He's like probably the last great romanticist, the end of the 19th century. So if you're into romanticist literature, definitely have to read Cyrano de Bergerac. It's probably the best of all of them. But he also wrote a play called Chanticleer.
Chanticleer?
Yeah. And it's about a rooster.
A rooster?
Yeah, rooster, who believes adamantly that his crow actually rises the sun. And all the other birds and farm animals think he's full of crap, and they're all trying to... And so he does it by nature, and he practices all day, and he, of course, you know, crows, and then, of course, the sun goes up. In his mind, it's cause and effect, right? He's causing it to happen. So everyone tries to stop him from doing it, to prove to him, because he's so cocky and annoying, and he's getting all the hens. And it's like, oh, that guy doesn't deserve all the hens. And he's like, he's fighting to get to this thing. But there are times when he doubts. There are times when, you know, like this little bird hen that he falls in love with wants him to stop for a while, you know, just say, just come away with me. Everything will be fine. Let's just, so you don't have to fight this brutal, you know, cock that wants to fight you. And so he goes, he's like, I'm not going to stop because it's the sun won't rise. The crops won't come up. You know, that's how important he is. So the point is, that this poem or this play is a lot about self-doubt. There are times when he's very doubtful. And I think every artist can recognize that, because there's a lot of doubt of like, the hell am I doing? Like, am I really, you know, going to do anything that matters? Like, what? Yeah. Why can't I just be a CPA or an accountant or, you know, a tech person or something? Nothing wrong with that. But it's freaking crazy to try to be anything in the arts.
Yeah.
So I think doubt's a big... Definitely, yes.
I think as I've gotten older, I kind of learned not to put all of my eggs in one basket. Like, I remember when I was young, and there was a part of me that's like, I had like different phases. Like, at one point, for example, I wanted to be an animator. So I was like, okay, I need to become an animator. I need to like practice like digital art. Yeah. I need to somehow get an internship and make like connections at Cartoon Network or like do whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think you grow older and you begin to see that a lot of people don't really get to accomplish what they want to accomplish. And, you know, I'd love to be a published writer someday. Technically, I guess I am. Hopefully. Yeah. Fingers crossed. But...
Well, there are a lot... So, one way that writers, successful writers, think of you're not a really successful writer. And I don't mean like big time. Just like... You're a successful writer when your backlog pays your salary, pays a salary for you.
Backlog?
So if you've written 10 books, 9 of them are your backlog, right? Like they're selling, you know, like over 10 years, you write 10 books, you have 9 that are just kind of in a library, like, you know, sitting on a shelf or on Amazon or whatever. When the sales from those 9 books equal like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, then you've made it as a writer.
Okay.
Because the problem is so the reason I'm saying that is because, one, being published isn't enough. There's a lot of published writers who still, I mean, even George R. R. Martin was, before he wrote his first like Game of Thrones or when they started selling, he had written a lot of stuff from his early 20s and he had to go teach. Right, that's, you know, to make money until he finally wrote his epics that started selling millions.
Yeah,
and I don't know what age he was at, but he was a little bit older. I mean, in his late thirties or forties or something. I'm not exactly sure on the dates on his time, so don't look at that. But he did have to go teach for a little while. Is the point?
Yeah. I mean, but could you have imagined if he just gave up when he was in his 20s and then he was like, okay, I'm not writing again, and then gave up?
I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's that old saying that there's like the graveyard is filled with great ideas and great poets. And it's like, I think most people do that. But it is a difficult question because it's like about priorities, mm-hmm. right? Because like you can't, because there are no guarantees. But I think at the other end of it, in today's world, one of the things I love about like this stuff is it's way easier to build the life you want today than ever before.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people underestimate, like, what, you know, people just have wrong priorities. It's like, I have to make $150,000 a year, I'm a fucking loser. It's like, wait a second, dude, come on. You don't need to make, or people think millionaire, like I have to be a millionaire. It's like, okay, even millionaires aren't making $1 million a year. Like, you understand that? Like, they're good at investing and they're smart about it. So I think it's actually better to, and it's possible in today's world to define your own state of success and then achieve that, right? Like being smart with your money in your 20s, making, you know, making only a little bit and scrimping by, but building your craft, building up a list of clients that are related that you can rely on for money, you know, if whatever that is, and then going and making it. I mean, that's what I'm doing now, 6 hours a week at this point. And this has taken me a long time for a few clients, and I'm making a small salary on 6 hours a week at this point. Nothing major, but it's enough to live on for now while I do this stuff 80 hours a week, right? And writing and all the other stuff until I can build that into the next thing. So my point is, if there is something that you want, I don't think it's like, if you're comparing yourself to Da Vinci and Michelangelo, yeah, you may not get there because you may not be that good. I don't know. But if you want to just make a living at something you enjoy, it's definitely possible in today's world. It's very possible. Like, I just think it's, like I said, about readjusting of priorities and thinking about the world more realistically.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then who knows? Keep pushing yourself. Maybe you will be, you know, Michelangelo. I don't know. It's possible.
Who do people consider the Michelangelo of poetry?
Ever? Shakespeare.
Shakespeare?
Probably Shakespeare. I mean, it depends. It's English poetry.
Yeah.
I mean, so...
Are you a Shakespeare fan?
I don't know how you could, like, read and not... Like, the moment you start to actually understand Shakespeare, which takes a lot of work, because it's 550 years old.
Yeah.
So the language has changed. It is really hard. There's a reason why you can, like, major in it. It's hard. But if you actually start to understand it, I don't see how you could not enjoy his work, especially Othello, Hamlet, yeah. Macbeth, you know, like his classics. Like, it's just, they're too good.
I think I remember hearing in my AP literature class that Shakespeare actually died at a pretty young age, like compared to the average lifespan of his time, like maybe in his like late 30s or 40s. And like towards the end of his life, he was like running like his own like company and like writing poetry and plays and things like that. So he was basically like a workaholic and in poor health. And I just wonder if he felt really sad and lonely.
Oh, that I don't know.
Yeah.
I do think that, have you ever seen a movie called Whiplash?
Sounds very familiar.
So I really recommend that movie for people who want to be art and who even have a concept of greatness, because one of the things that it really does well is it condenses in like 90 minutes what it looks like to achieve greatness and the kind of, because a lot of people think, I think a lot of people, maybe not you, but in our day and age, that if you just feel it and say it, that you're going to be great. But the greatest people of all time were like, they went through hell, like in every sense of the word. Like people were harsh on them, you know, mentors were harsh on them, and it was very difficult. So Whiplash is about a drummer who wants to be one of the greatest drummers of all time. So he gets this, so he goes to this great school, and there's a mentor there, a teacher, but the teacher is fucking brutal, like throwing chairs at his head, throwing
Jesus,
you know, yeah, just all this stuff. It's like, and he keeps trying to make him cry, and he slaps him around.
Was this a private school?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Well, it's not a documentary. But you know, so he's not supposed to do that stuff, even at a private school. You're not allowed to punch your kid and your students in a private school. But still, but the idea of pushing him and, you know, he, every time he does this, instead of giving up, he practices until his knuckles bleed and his, you know, wrists are raw or his forearms are raw. Like, he keeps going harder and harder and harder and trying to be better and better and better and better. And it's like a very truncated version of the concept, what I would call achieving greatness, but it's helpful to visualize what kind of, like, to think about, do I want to go through that? Like, do I really want to go through that? You know, I mean, imagine you're writing, like going to, you know, poetry is difficult, but like going to a professional, like if you want to write novels, let's say.
Yeah.
Do you want to write novels?
Yeah, I'm writing, or that's right, not a novel, but technically a short story, hopefully a novella or a novel in the future.
But you want to, you would love to write novellas, novels, and sell them at some point too. So just imagine if you were to go put your novella in someone and they said, this sucks, you suck, and show everything that sucks. If you want to be decent, rewrite the whole damn thing and try again. Would you do it?
Honestly.
Or would you give up?
It might take me a while to get back on my feet. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Well, that's good. But so my advice is that type of thing, maybe not that harsh necessarily, but that type of thing is much more valuable to achieving anything good in anything, really, than praising something and saying, oh, this looks good, right? That's not very helpful.
It's not constructive criticism.
I don't even care about constructive criticism. I think that's too nice. I just think criticism. Because, like, that, you need to, like, be able to get outside of yourself and your own emotional connection to it. And that's super hard. And having someone who's really good at it, because again, we're talking about not just your friends liking it. We're talking about millions of people or thousands or hundreds of thousands of people reading it. And maybe even a, you know, studio executive picking it up and making it into a movie. It has to be good. And what makes something good is usually, I mean, there's a lot of things that make it good, but one thing is going through that kind of ringer to make sure that different types of people will see it and think of it as good. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's my view anyway. The hell do I know? That's just my view.
It's not that I disagree. I think I'm just taking a minute to digest it. But yeah. I do agree. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you want to get into poetry. That's good.
Yeah.
Keep doing it.
Thank you.
The reason I say this about, so if you were to send me like fiction, I can, like, I've published like something like a pseudo publishing of fiction, but I've actually gotten nonfiction, a lot of articles and such that I've written, published in actual magazines.
Wow.
And I do have a training to actually do editing on that. Mm-hmm. Poetry, I can't really give you any comment. I don't know anything about that. Like, I can't, it's like, oh, that sounds good. I can, you know, if we sat down, maybe I can give some criticism. But if you wanted like actual, like on your short story feedback, I can give you like intense feedback. That, you know, is, you can go back and take it if you want.
All right.
That's your call, but it is open if you're interested. I'm more than happy. Especially, that's one of the purposes of the magazine I started, is that I want to be able to give that to kind of, you know, have writers that push themselves to go past the easy point. So nobody submits, except for poetry, no fiction that's submitted goes uncriticized and unedited. So. You can't just submit and then expect it to go up.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're doing a really great thing.
We'll submit some of your short stories too. Yeah,
I definitely will. I think they just need a little bit more work right now.
Okay, well, I mean, if you want to work, what I'm saying is if you want to submit them, I'll help you work through them.
Okay.
Unless you think it's absolute crap and it's not ready at all, then okay, I don't want to see it. I want to see stuff that's good and then I'll get it. But on the apology before, because I know the guys are going to be coming here for the meeting soon.
Yeah.
On the apology... so your question was about greatness, and that was interesting. So your mind, when you heard this poem, went to greatness, and I'm just curious, why did you go there? Like, what does it take to be a great anything? Was what you thought of? I'm just curious, why did you think of that at the when I read the apology poem?
I think mainly because Emerson is kind of revered in a lot of circles,
yeah,
and he is considered one of the greats.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Okay, so you just thought so. What did you think of the poem itself?
I enjoyed the poem.
Okay. What do you think it's about?
I think it's, I mean, it does live up to, you know, its title, An Apology. But in a sense, I think it's also about sacrifice, because the narrator knows that he has some people who might be, you know, disappointed in him, but he still needs to take some time and do what he has to do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, for sure, because he talks...
Is it okay if I see it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cool.
It's,
You've got a pretty big phone case.
Well, I don't have... So I don't have a wallet.
Oh, that's so it. You have your credit cards and stuff?
Yeah, I used to have a big old wallet.
So that way someone can steal your phone and your wallet in one?
You could try and steal my phone, but it probably won't go well for you. No people can... Well, maybe you can, because I gave it to you, but I usually am not very kind about letting people use my phone, because it's basically my life. I don't know how people can live without the... But if you were to, like, Google search The Apology, Emerson, it'll pop up.
Okay.
On your, because what I was going to say is, and we could show it here, but what you were saying makes me think of this one, Chide Me Not, Laborious Band, for the idle flowers I brought. Right? Like, that's what you're saying, is, like, it's about this idea of... I lost my train of thought about what you said.
Right? Sacrifice?
Yeah, like, well, how people, like, he's trying to apologize. That's it. Trying to apologize to people about his behavior, right?
Yeah.
And this is Chide Me Not, Laborious Band. Like, his band of brothers. Like, hey, leave me alone. For the idle flowers I brought, every aster in my hand goes home loaded with a thought. The reason I thought about this with you is the nature, like, and this is what I wanted to hear from you about, if you had any thoughts on this, is, like, the nature of a poet and an artist, the idleness and leisurely, and it seems like they're indolent, they're lazy, they don't do anything. Have you ever gotten that sense from people? Like,
I have heard that, but like, I think,
put it in contrast to business people,
yeah,
who are productive, right? Business people do stuff with their lives, right? They're good. They
basically me versus things. My sister.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, she's trying to do something that's important and helpful in society, and you're not, right? Because you're trying to be an artist.
Yeah.
That's what he's kind of talking about. I think that's part of, because the question is, what is the value of art?
I'm not sure if we've had any stable society that has no artists whatsoever.
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah.
But still, people don't think of it, especially in our culture.
Yeah.
People don't really value it in the same way. Especially if you take out entertainment. Like, people very value entertainment. And by entertainment, I mean, like, blockbuster movies. But what about, like, a serious literary work? It's not necessarily, or a powerful poem, right? What's the value in that? And we'll end with this, because everyone's arriving.
It's a loaded question. I'm not exactly sure where to start. But I think when it comes to works like that, it truly... Because usually there'll be like a central theme or like a central question
mm-hmm.
that the piece asks. So then, in turn, the viewer has to answer that in a sense. And sometimes those truths are uncomfortable.
So part of what an artist does is make you uncomfortable.
Yes.
And there's value in that.
It is.
I agree.
We all deserve a little shame sometimes.
Shame. You don't know that reference. I agree. We'll end with that. I think that's important. And it goes back to what we were talking about with becoming great. Part of pushing people is making them uncomfortable, actually.
Yeah.
And perhaps there's also a little bit of love in there, too.
It's kind of like... Oh, sorry to interrupt you.
But I have to apologize. All I do is fucking talk and talk and talk. So
it's kind of like when, for example, a parent will kind of push their child to do something that they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And like, usually it's because the kid has to go outside their comfort zone for a little bit. But at the end of the day, the child still needs to learn like some form of independence just to grow and eventually function as an adult one day.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
We need to talk about that next time, because that's not happening in our culture anymore.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, you mean helicopter parents?
Yeah, like that's big. That's a problem.
I can talk all day about helicopter parents, so don't get me started.
Helicopter parents?
I love them, but yes.
Okay. Well, eventually you got to move out.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, my parents were not like that at all, and I still moved out at 18. The second I turned 18, pew, I was out of there. I don't know how people could stay. I don't know. Like, you gotta go explore the world.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? All right. That's a good place to stop.
All right.
Any last words?
Thank you so much for having me.
Last comments? Okay.
Yeah. That's pretty much a thanks.
All right. Thank you, Miriam.
Yeah, no problem. That was fun.
All right. Now we get to read your short story for the group.
Okay.
All right.